in my little example, you know, if my employer paid me the same amount of money every month, but didn't tell me when they were going to pay it, and if my landlord collected the same rent, but he knocked on the door whenever he wanted to, you know, I'd have to hold on to so much more cash. So that was kind of the beginning of my understanding with cash. And then over the years, you know, I've been consulting with big companies and mid-sized companies. And it's interesting that some of those basic lessons that we learned from, you know, basic household economics, we kind of forget when we go into business. So I've spent, you know, the bulk of my career really focused on helping organizations and people understand the basic tenets of working capital and cash management.
Welcome to Biz Help for You, the show that saves you the expensive learning curve by providing advice from industry experts in every facet of the entrepreneurial journey. Too many small businesses collapse. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, 20% fail within their first year, and less than 35% make it to their 10th anniversary. The goal of this podcast is to change that statistic. So if you're interested in learning more to be a successful entrepreneur, tune in today.
Let me tell you a little bit about my guest today. Peter W. Kingma, author of Cash is King, is a seasoned professional with over three decades of experience in advising global companies on cash management strategies. Leading the working capital practice in the Americas for Ernst & Young LLP, he specializes in various sectors, including manufacturing, consumer products, retail, aerospace, and defense. Kingma's expertise has been featured in publications like CFO Magazine and CNBC Online. You will gain valuable insights into optimizing cash flow and working capital management from his extensive knowledge and practical experience. So, Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Candy. Happy to be here.
I am looking forward to this conversation, of course, for what I do in my own business. This is an important topic. But before I get into questions that I have for you on this subject, I'd love for you to tell a little bit of your story and how you got your experience and knowledge in cash management.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it really started, my first foray into understanding the importance of cash started in right out of college when I was living paycheck to paycheck. And, you know, the days before I would get paid, I referred to those as my tuna fish and green bean days, because that's about all I could afford. Now, fortunately, because I knew I was going to get paid, I could weather that storm for a day or two. But, you know, the interesting thing about cash flow is it's all about timing, right? It's all about ensuring that the receipts come in when you predict them, and that the outflow goes out when you predict that as well. So in my little example, you know, if my employer paid me the same amount of money every month, but didn't tell me when they were going to pay it, and if my landlord collected the same rent, but he knocked on the door whenever he wanted to, you know, I'd have to hold on to so much more cash. So that was kind of the beginning of my understanding with cash. And then over the years, you know, I've been consulting with big companies and mid-sized companies, and it's interesting that some of those basic lessons that we learned from, you know, basic household economics, we kind of forget when we go into business. So I've spent, you know, the bulk of my career really focused on helping organizations and people understand the basic tenets of working capital and cash management.
Mm-hmm. That's so important. I would love you to explain really the difference between cash flow or cash management and profit and loss, because a lot of people don't understand the difference between the two and they get confused because they're like, well, how can I have profit on this report when I don't have money in the bank? So can you explain that?
Yeah, that's great. You know, what I've observed, Candy, over the years is that we do a really great job of explaining to people profit and loss. We do a great job of drilling in the importance of revenue and the importance of containing costs. And in most businesses, you know, people have a full, you know, a complete understanding of their role in both of those functions. But when it comes to the balance sheet, to cash, we sort of forget some of the basic principles, and we make decisions every day that can encumber or tie up cash. in my book, I start off with a great example that, you know, this may date me a bit, but I start off with a great example of from the 1980s of Lee Iacocca going before Congress to get a bailout for the Chrysler Corporation. And it was huge news at the time. I mean, Chrysler was the 10th largest company in the United States, you know, big, big, well-known organization with lots and lots of revenue, and actually had a fair amount of profit as well, but was in a liquidity crisis. And so, you know, profitable companies can go bankrupt. And so you're absolutely right. Revenue does not equal cash flow, because it really is, again, if people owe you money and they haven't paid you, you know, that's cash that somehow you're going to have to find somewhere else to be able to pay your bills or to buy inventory or to keep the lights on.
Right. Well, an example that popped in my head as you were talking too, I had someone come to me years ago that had a notice from the IRS that said they owed like $10,000 in tax or something like that. And based on her tax bracket, I think she had originally made like, you know, $40,000 or $50,000 or something like that. I don't remember the exact details, but she's like, I don't understand. How could I even have had any money I owed them? Because I had no money left over. And I said, but you were living off of the profits, right? She was sole proprietor, drawing the money out, didn't understand the concept. So when she came to me, I had to do the bookkeeping and then showed her like, well, according to this profit and loss report, you had, you know, $40,000 or $50,000 of profit, whatever that was. And it flows through into you personally. And then there's other things that go into your tax return, but that's what happened. You lived off the profit, and that's why you had the business, was to live off of it. But that was a big surprise to her. And, you know, she had to pay that tax that she hadn't planned on. So I think that's a misconception that people don't realize that, you know, things that are equity, you know, that you have to put on the balance sheet, or if you have a loan and you're making those loan payments, right, the interest you can expense, but the rest of it is paying down a liability. So that's not going to reduce your profit. So I think that's where a lot of the confusion comes in.
I think so. Absolutely. You know, in the book, I talk about every dollar that you invest in your business costs the same, but produces different returns. And so, you know, the other trap I think people get into is they look at the amount of inventory they may have and view that, you know, as a positive asset, which it is, but you've got to sell it at some point, and you've got to make sure you collect the money from that. And so the amount of money that you tie up on inventory, if you tie too much and you buy too much, you know, that can really cause significant problems for you at some point if you aren't selling it fast enough.
Right. And I think I actually had someone on my podcast at one point talking about cash flow again, too, and how important it is. And at some point, it may be necessary to lose money on selling your inventory just to get the cash as well. So do you want to talk about that as well, too? Like, why might you need to take a loss on something just to get that cash in the bank?
That's right. A lot of businesses do that, even very big businesses. So, you know, there's two concepts. I'll talk about inventory, but I'll also talk about customers as well. And let's start with inventory. But to your point, you know, it's very important to understand, you know, the margins that you've got on your inventory that you're getting from each sale. But it's very important to understand the life of that inventory as well. So, you know, as let's say it was a food product, we would understand that quite well, right? There's a shelf life to it. But all inventory, frankly, has some form of shelf life to it. You know, in my book, I say maybe the only example is the old mechanical can opener is still being produced today from the 1800s and still selling. But everything else goes through an evolution and a change. And so, you know, in order to maintain proper cash flow, yeah, you may have to make some hard decisions to sell off inventory at a discount. The same thing I can say for customers that I talk about is that, you know, it's important to understand that not all customers are equal. Some customers cost you more to service. And so really having a full understanding of the cost to serve of that customer. And sometimes it's little things like, you know, the contract that you wrote with that customer. Is it something that you wrote yourself, or is it something that is on the customer? We'll call it the customer's paper, their contract. Because if you multiply that, let's just say you have 100 customers and you have 100 different types of contracts, that becomes harder and harder for you as your business grows to manage that, to manage those relationships and to fully understand, you know, what your commitments and obligations are. So complexity can creep in, you know, into that relationship, and real cost can creep into that relationship that will also encumber cash.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, do you want to talk about some of the best practices that you recommend for managing the five steps from order to cash, and how can entrepreneurs implement them in their businesses?
Yeah. Well, it starts with billing, right? It starts with ensuring, well, actually, let's back up. It starts with how you set up the customer in the first place. Mm. So what commercial terms have you agreed to with that customer? You know, when do you get paid? Who takes a transfer of material at what point, et cetera? So all of those commercial arrangements are very important. And I think far too often we get ourselves so excited about making a sale that we then forget that we'll negotiate on price, we'll negotiate on what we're going to sell, and we'll get the big deal. And then at the very end, we'll come up with, all right, now, what are the commercial terms of when can I bill you? How can you, you know, when do you pay me for that? In what way do you pay me? So all of those things are vitally important to hammer out at the time of negotiating the sale, because those all have real costs associated with them. Then, you know, ensuring that you get bills out on time. You know, most businesses and most parties do pay when they're supposed to pay. I'm sure there are deadbeats mm-hmm. out there, but right. for the most part, most people do, you know, most of your business relationships they pay as they go. And oftentimes the problem is our own. It's mm-hmm. that we are slow in getting a bill out, or we're inaccurate, or if the customer has a purchase order that we have to reference, you know, are we referencing that correctly? So those are vitally important. Are we sending the bill to the right place? All those little things that are not very hard to do sometimes trip organizations and businesses up. Mm-hmm. You know, and then again, understanding the profile of your customers. And if a customer is paying you on time all the time and then suddenly starts to delay, you know, really looking into that and figuring out what's going on there. Because, you know, there could be a fundamental problem that is within our control. It could be something that's happening mm-hmm. with the customer. But this is important as I talk about the whole process of a credit review and having a regular credit review, even if you may have done an initial credit review of your customer. But it's important to refresh that because their business may change as well. They're, mm-hmm. you know, maybe they're over leveraged, you know, later on in the life cycle of the relationship. So, you know, very important to manage that. And then lastly, if it comes down to, you know, basic forms of payment, you know, I talk about wherever possible, get away from checks. Checks mm-hmm. are so expensive for you to process. They're expensive, frankly, for your customers as well. But and I've got some statistics in the book about how, you know, how expensive they really are, which is eye opening. But, you know, wherever possible, move toward payment in advance or electronic payments. Or if worst case scenario, there's a concept called lockboxes that banks mm-hmm. offer, where you can, it's basically a physical location where a check can go and they record it at that point in time and record it into your accounts. So the method of payment is also vitally important in managing order to cash.
Right. Well, as you were talking to, I was thinking I had actually written a chapter in a book probably 10 years ago now too on mistakes business owners make and how to avoid them. And one of them was talking about invoicing. And I was saying a lot of times, especially when there's like a sole proprietor, they're doing all of the tasks in their company and they're trying to service their customer, they put off their own invoicing, right? And I'll get to it, you know. And my point was like, put yourself on the calendar, like be your own customer too, right? Make sure that you are doing that too, because I've seen that happen a lot too, where people will wait until they really need the cash. And now you're sending it out and the customer may think that they still have 15-day terms or 30-day terms or whatever that is. And now you're desperate, right? So making sure that you consistently bill whatever that is, whether it's monthly or a project ends, you know, but put yourself kind of on your own calendar too.
Absolutely. And understand when the payment clock starts with your customer. So, mm-hmm. And you can apply this in reverse for things that you buy, but the leading practice is to start the payment clock on the day that the invoice is received, not the mm-hmm. date of the invoice. And so to your point, if I send out the invoice on the first of the month, but you know, then, and it's received on the seventh of the month, that's the day that the clock will start. Even if the date on the invoice say was, you know, the 15th of the prior month. So it's very important to understand when that payment clock will start with your customer. So then you'll know how long you have, and you can forecast out, you know, when the cash should come in.
Right. Well, when you were also talking about doing like those credit checks on your client, I'm sure some people are thinking, well, I don't even know how I check that credit. Like, can you give some tips on where they would look or get the information?
Yeah, well, there's, you know, tremendous sources out there, Dun & Bradstreet. There are different agencies that you can subscribe to that will do credit checks for you, depending on the size of the company. But one thing I would also say is be careful not to be enamored just by the size of the business you're dealing with. You know, we're very careful that we check individuals' credit scores or credit checks, you know, or other small businesses. But if you happen to have the good fortune of selling into a very large or mid-sized business, be careful to ensure that you are using some of those credit check agencies to check, you know, their credit worthiness and follow what's been happening in their business. Because I said, like the Chrysler example, very big businesses can run into financial problems. The other thing that I see that is just, it drives small businesses crazy, but mid and big-sized businesses will often play games with their cash reported numbers at the end of a quarter. And so we call that window dressing, but they'll withhold payments to vendors so that they can prop up their reported cash number at the end of the quarter. And if you're a small business and you're counting on that check to come in at the right time, and all of a sudden it doesn't, and you have to wait another 10 or 15 days for it, that's a big problem. So you need to stay on top of watching if anything like that is happening. And it usually is a publicly report, you know, publicly traded company that would do something like that. But if things like that happen, you need to go and have, you know, a very serious conversation with them. It's not per se illegal, but it's certainly unethical, and it's very difficult for small businesses to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard when the small business is kind of fighting the big company too, because a lot of times the big company will say, well, you know, if you don't like the terms, you just don't have to work with us, right? And it makes it hard for the small guys to be able to, you know, get the cash like they said that they really need.
And that's the point about really understanding the cost to serve of the customer, right? Mm-hmm. And baking that into the conversation, you know, as you renew agreements. Now, you're right. In some cases, you just may not have leverage at all. And if you don't have leverage, then that means you've got to do everything in your control to make sure your part of the process is as efficient as possible so that the bills are as clean as possible. They're getting out the right time. You're invoicing correctly. You're sending the right materials. Because if you don't have a negotiating power, then you're going to have to make sure that you are as effective and as efficient as you can be.
Right. So if somebody has, you know, outstanding AR, you know, accounts receivable from someone that they need to collect and they're not sure now the process, they've been reaching out, they've called, they've emailed, and it's kind of radio silence. Like, what do you suggest in terms of actually collecting on that? Do they go to a collection agency? Like, what steps do you recommend for them to be able to end up collecting on that in the long run? And if there are any reasons why someone's not paying, like if they think something is wrong, how do they go about correcting all of that?
Let's start with that concept first. And we refer to that as dispute management. And it's very important to, when there is a dispute, and the dispute can be a lot of different things. It could be maybe you shipped the wrong material, maybe you didn't include the right documentation in with what you shipped, you sent the bill to the wrong place, you put the wrong PO number on. There could be a number of different reasons why a mistake may have been made. It's very important, no matter what size business you have, is to understand the root cause of what that dispute was, right? And to properly code that dispute. If you're dealing in an organization where you have maybe multiple employees, to make sure that it's properly recorded and coded and that you can resolve that dispute going forward, so you don't have the same problem over and over again. You know, you magnify that. I work with very large organizations, and they will have, you know, hundreds of people that's all they do is manage this process. But the same principles can be applied to a small business as well. In terms of, you know, collecting, you know, collection agencies are certainly an option. They're expensive, though. So, you know, I would say use them as you need to. But I think, again, what I find is that most businesses and people will pay if you have the conversation with them and if you are doing, you know, taking sort of the right steps. And if they won't, if they're just not, you know, returning your calls, then maybe a collection agency is the right. But the other thing you've got to do is be very quick to turn service off, to stop selling to them, to stop shipping. And again, we get, this is back to your very first question, right, about revenue and P&L, is we are so, we love revenue. We love big sales. We get so enamored with that. And we'll, you know, we'll wring our hands, but this is a customer who's, you know, they're buying 100 units from us every month. And yeah, but if they're not paying you, right, that's just going to create more and more problems for you. It's going to snowball. And so you've got to be prepared to make the tough decision to cut them off and to stop selling to them.
And how do you feel about factoring companies where if someone is in a little bit of a cash flow pinch and they've heard like, oh, well, I can sell my receivables and get some cash now. What do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's a great option. Again, expensive. You know, it's just like anything else. It's like, you know, using your credit card, you know, use it judiciously. But the interest on factoring, the interest on, you know, credit card use, on any kind of that sort of form of extended debt comes with a cost. And so I'd say use it. But, you know, this is, again, if you're using factoring, it's a good opportunity to step back and to say, you know, what other things am I doing in the business that I could be more effective at? It could be maybe I'm just not very good at forecasting the inventory and I've got too much cash tied up in that. Or maybe I have bad relationships with the vendors that I'm buying from. You know, I haven't negotiated, I haven't fully understood the power I have over them, and I haven't negotiated better terms for when I have to pay them. So I would really do the self-examination of all those elements that were, you know, within your control before you go to the step of having to pay, you know, finance charges.
Right. And you just mentioned, you know, vendors and obviously getting the supplies and things like that too. And what would you say in terms of managing that supply chain to make sure that they still have the cash flow that they need? And I know sometimes it's beyond our control. Like we know, like COVID really brought a lot of supply chain issues, but any tips kind of on that area?
Yeah. You know, again, in the book, I talk about the importance of understanding, you know, your power in the negotiating, you know, in that sort of relationship. And the same would play true to when you're selling, but let's just focus on the buying now. There are going to be some instances, let's say you're buying from a, you know, you're going out and you're buying supplies from a big company, right? You're not going to have any control over the commercial terms. It's going to be take it or leave it. It's probably going to be cash on, you know, at the time of sale. So there's going to be very little leeway. You know, at the other end of the polarity is where you have, you know, you are the big dog. You're buying enough from another smaller vendor or some other business, and you can negotiate, you know, more favorable terms. What I would say is when you do that, understand, though, that it's not just a zero-sum game. It's not about just squeezing the other guy as far as you can, because you want to create a healthy, you know, ecosystem for your supply chain as well. So even if you can say you have the power to push 120-day terms, that might not be the right answer. Because that will put them in a cash bind and create an unstable relationship with that vendor. So you need to understand kind of the you know, the sort of the whole ecosystem and what is possible. But what a quick rule of thumb is, look at what your receivables are and look at and calculate what your best possible days to collect are. So that means if I add up my different terms that I've got with my customers and, you know, some may be 35 days, some may be 45 days, whatever it is, What's the best possible days to collect? Then go and look at your payables and make sure that your payables are at least as high, or if not, or ideally higher than your best possible days to collect, right? So if on average I'm having to collect from my customers at say 40 days, then I want my payables to at least on average be 40 days or more, right? Because otherwise I'm becoming a bank. I'm bankrolling my customers in that case. So that's very important as well. But like I said, small businesses, you may not always have that luxury. So then it's really going to have to come down to the way you manage inventory and the way you manage customer relationships.
Right. Any final tip you would like to share that I didn't think to ask the question on?
No, I think we talked about a lot of it. You know, the other thing is forecasting. I cover this in the book quite a bit. Is, you know, again, cash is not that complicated, right? In its simple form, it's, you know, get people to pay you faster, pay people slower, and hold less inventory, right? So maybe you don't need my book. That's it. That's the secret. but, you know, forecasting, it's all about the timing of when receipts and disbursements come in. And so to your point, of the example of somebody being surprised because they've made great sales, but there's no cash in the bank. It's very important to, on a regular basis, be on top of that forecast and the projections so that you're not surprised, because you do need, the one thing I talk about is the one certain thing about business is that it is uncertain. You know, there are going to be ups and downs. There's going to be a customer that pulls out at the last minute. You're going to have, you're going to have to pay extra for shipping costs because something has happened. And so you're always going to need to have enough reserve cash on hand to be able to weather those storms. Keeping on top of a very accurate and timely forecast so that you know when these events are going to happen is critically important. That's the example I was talking about with my rent payment and my and my paycheck. It was very easy when it was just two kind of things like that. But you need to stay on top of that, for all the aspects of receipts and disbursements.
Right. Well, I know we're coming to the end of the time we have together, so I'd love to ask if you have an offer that you would like to extend to our listeners and how they can connect with you if they want to reach out.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got my website is peterkingma.com. And on the website, you can download the introduction of my book. You can sign up for emails from me on regular links to other podcasts like this, other materials that I've got there. I will say one quick thing about the book is it is not a textbook, so fear not. I actually created a fictitious company, and so it's a very easy to read, kind of hopefully fun, conversation about cash. And in each chapter, the characters in the company are trying to solve these problems. So something that could be very relatable for small business owners.
Perfect. I'm sure some people will enjoy hearing that too, because I think sometimes they're like, oh, it's going to just be too factual, right? But when you can have it in a story, I think it makes it a little more relatable. So
No graphs. There are no calculations. I purposely tried to keep it, at a level that would be relatable.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Peter, for being a guest on my show, talking on this topic. Again, I know that understanding cash flow is extremely important, and I'm just so thankful that you are here to give your expertise on that subject.
Thank you for having me.
And to the listener, if you enjoyed today's discussion and you want to hear additional information on the topic, you can find access to the exclusive content through our resource link in the show notes.
Thank you for tuning in today. Would you please share this episode with those you know and leave a review on your favorite platform? And if you find our show informative, would you consider being a financial sponsor to help me continue my mission to educate business owners? A link is located in the episode description, and no amount is too small. I'd really appreciate your support. If you are interested in connecting with our guest and receiving the offer they had to share, a link to our resource page is in the show notes. Finally, if you have any bookkeeping or payroll needs, reach out to us at 310-534-5577 or contact@abandp.com. My team and I are eager to assist you. Until next time, have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Biz Help for You. Please join your host, Candy Messer, again next time. Have a terrific day.